You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by Come As You Are. Come As You Are is Canada's only worker-owned co-op sex shop. Trans-owned and operated, Come As You Are carefully reviews and curates their selection of sex toys, books, and DVDs. Now you can get 15% off your next purchase at comeasyouare.com using coupon code AFTERDARK. Content warning. The language, content, and discussion found within this episode of Disability After Dark will be explicit. Listener discretion advised.
Watching content with care, it's popcorn and power chairs.
Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to the show, friends. And thank you so much for clicking on this brand new episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories. I am your deliciously disabled daddy host. Let us get comfy, cozy, and crippled and get today started, shall we? Friends, it is almost springtime, and as a severely disabled person, I love spring because it means I can actually go outside again and do stuff. I love the springtime and I love the birds, and we're going to, here in Toronto, I think the day you listen to this, we are just about, we either had the time change or we're going to have the time change that evening, I think. I think we would have already had it though, I'm not sure. I love spring because it means I can actually get outside and see the places and do the things. And I don't have to dress for stuff anymore. So that's really, I'm really, really excited for spring. I'm finally feeling upbeat about it because I can finally go outside and resume my daily walks for my mental health, because staying inside 6 months a year is really hard when you're disabled and you can't go outside. It's really, really tough. So I'm excited for the better weather. What else do I want to share with you? What I want to share with you, a little plug for myself. So you hear this wonderful podcast, you hear all this work that I do on this show, but I also do talks around the world and around the country, talking about disability, queerness, and sexuality, and all those things. So if you are listening from, say, a university, or you want to bring me in to talk to your students, consider hiring me for the end of the spring semester, or even fall next year. Hire me for your stuff. Go to andrewgerza.com/rates, and you'll see my rates for 2024. I've slashed my rates because times are tough, and I want to work. So if you'd like to work with me, consider hiring me there. On the show today, as you heard from the title card, we're going to do another episode of Popcorn and Power Chairs, the series on this show where I sit down and review some disability-themed media, and then we talk about it, and I make notes on it, and we talk about how I feel about it and how it connects to the world of disability. And I love doing this because we don't have enough people talking about disability in the media in the way that I like to do, so I'm excited to do that here with you today. And do we have a doozy of a film for you for us to go through today on this episode of Popcorn and Power Chairs? Do we have a doozy? We're going to be reviewing the 2022 critically acclaimed film The Whale, directed by Darren Aronofsky, starring Brendan Fraser in his comeback film, Sadie Sink from Stranger Things. And this is a film that deals with a morbidly obese man who is trying to seek redemption in his life. And I have so many feelings about this film. I watched it once a few months ago, maybe last year. I think last year I watched it. just to watch it, and I was immediately struck by the ableism in this film, the fatphobia in this film. I have so many feelings about it, and I'm excited to share those with you now. So let's listen to the trailer, and you can watch The Whale if you want to watch along as we talk about it. You can watch The Whale. I think it's available on, here, let me Google where it's available, where you can watch it. You can watch The Whale. Gonna Google it, hang on. To watch. You can watch it on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, and it's even available to buy on all those places, and also YouTube. So you can, if you want to watch along, you can. The synopsis for this film: in a town in Idaho, Charlie, a reclusive and unhealthy English teacher, hides out in his flat and eats his way to death. He is desperate to reconnect with his teenage daughter for a last chance at redemption. This movie won the Academy Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role. Didn't know that till right now. I have a lot of feelings about that. Was nominated for the same thing, Academy Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role. Listen, I love me some Brendan Fraser, but I did not love him in this role. I had a lot of problems with it, and we're going to talk about it right now after we listen to the trailer.
I know these rules can feel constraining, but remember, the point of this course is to learn how to write clearly and persuasively. Think about that. Think about the truth of your argument. You're an amazing person, Ellie. I couldn't ask for a more incredible daughter.
Are you actually trying to parent me right now?
Who would want me to be a part of their life?
You don't stay in touch with Mom?
She really only tells me things about you.
Why?
Because that's all I want to know about.
Why'd you gain all that weight?
Someone close to me passed away, and it had an effect on me.
You haven't seen her since she was 8 years old, and you're gonna reconnect with her?
Sorry.
I don't like this. This isn't a good idea.
I'm sorry.
You say you're sorry one more time, I will shove a knife right into you, I swear to God.
Go ahead, what's it gonna do? My internal organs are 2 feet in at least.
Why do you suddenly need to see her so bad? Why now?
Liz.
I'm worried that she's forgotten what an amazing person she is.
I need to know that she's gonna have a decent life, where she cares about people, and that she's gonna be okay. I need to know that I have done one thing right with my life.
All right, so the very first scene that we see Charlie in his house masturbating to gay porn. That's literally the very first thing you see, is he's masturbating to gay porn. And we see him in a fat suit as Charlie on his couch masturbating to gay porn, and we notice right away that he has trouble breathing. And I have so many problems right away with seeing Brendan Fraser in a fat suit. It bothers me because why do we have to employ a fat suit to show somebody with morbid obesity? Why couldn't we just hire somebody who is obese or who is fat? Why couldn't we just hire them? I have a lot of feelings about that. It really bothered me right away. And then we see imagery of his walker and other mobility aids that he uses throughout his house. So it is immediately apparent to the viewer that we are to assume that because he's fat, he's become disabled. To be honest, it's a pretty jarring opening scene for the audience to be introduced to. You see the porn in the background, you can hear him jerking off, and you can, you know, he's getting right into it, and it's a pretty, you know, visceral scene But it sets him up right away to be a sad, lonely, sympathetic character. I suppose you could say that because we never see disabled or fat people exploring and enjoying their sexuality really enough, I suppose you could say that it's a good thing that he was masturbating on screen, and perhaps so, but the way it is set up here isn't showing it to be a good thing. It's showing it to be sad. It's designed to make us feel pity for him. So then a Mormon boy, who we later find out his name is Thomas, comes to the door and wants to help him. Asks him for help, comes in the door and sees the porn playing and is like, "Oh goodness, I'm so sorry, the porn." And then Charlie asks the boy to help him pick up his phone that he dropped, and we see how much trouble Charlie has doing basic tasks because he is fat. But as a severely disabled person, I felt something here too, because if I drop something, I need a lot of help too. I often need somebody to help me pick up stuff because I dropped it. So from a disability standpoint, I felt something here. And I felt connected to the character here in a way that maybe others might not. And I felt empathetic and sympathetic to him here, because I've been in that situation where I drop something and I need help and I can't get it and it has to stay there forever. I get that. So then his nurse, Liz, comes over to help him, and we see their relationship and we see their friendship right away and how much she takes care of him. She urges him to go to the doctor because she can tell he's not doing so great. And he says that he has no health insurance. He can't go to the hospital or see the doctor. He has no health insurance. It would cost thousands of dollars, has no money. And all I can think was, this is very common for a lot of Americans and a lot of disabled Americans and fat Americans to not have health insurance. I am privileged that I live in a place where we have quote-unquote free healthcare. This doesn't mean it's free. It just means you don't have to pay for the major things. And I'm really thankful for that. But it also means in Canada where I live, if I go to the hospital, I could still die there. Because they wouldn't see me for 12 to 14 hours. So I feel like a lot of Americans will empathize with not having healthcare and therefore not going to the hospital. And then at some point, then they're talking about all this and we see Charlie stand up to use his walker to go to the bathroom. And as he's doing that, it's underscored in this moment by sad, plinky, plunky music to show and to underscore to the audience just how insular and pitiful his life is. And right away, he apologizes to Liz for needing help with something. And as a severely disabled person, I understand that reflex that you do that sometimes without even thinking. You just say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry, sorry, I need help, sorry." You apologize as a reflex without even realizing that you're doing it, without even blinking. You can apologize 5 times because you don't want to be a burden on someone else. And I felt connected to the character in that way because sorry is like my second language as a disabled person. So then Liz, his nurse, tells him that he has congestive heart failure and that he'll be dead by the weekend if he doesn't go to the hospital. And kind of like I said a second ago, I wrote down, I understand the fear of going to the hospital, knowing that if you look different or being different in the hospital will change the quality of care you receive. And this is true. And so he probably has a lot of fear about how they look at him as a fat, disabled person in the hospital. And that's probably underpinning why he doesn't want to go. Charlie apologizes again. He says, "Oh, sorry." And Liz yells at him for apologizing so much. She says, "Stop saying sorry. If you say sorry one more time, I'm going to stick a knife in you," which I know was meant to be a joke, but feels pretty ableist. and unaware of all the abuses that disabled people have to contend with. Like, why would you say, stop saying sorry, I'm going to hurt you? Disabled people are constantly victims of violence, and I feel like this joke was really, really not picking up on the importance of that, and it just underscores, and we'll talk about this throughout the film, but it underscores why Darren Aronofsky is not a disabled person and doesn't understand some of the ableist things he's doing by putting this stuff in the film. We're only 13 minutes into the film at this point. I'm already immensely bothered by the fat phobia here and the ableism here. After just 13 minutes at this point, the movie has gone on for 13 minutes. And I'm already, like, when I watched it just now, I was ready to turn it off because I couldn't. I was already like, wow, this is a lot. So just imagine for the next 2 hours what it's going to be like. Wow. Because the movie does go on for about 2 hours. We see Charlie using mobility aids like a walker and a transfer aid to get into bed. He has one of those pulley things above his bed. It's like a pulley triangle that he pulls onto to get into bed. And I like seeing that because a lot of disabled people use that to transfer. And so I think that was important to see. But realistically, Charlie might have something like a Hoyer lift or other mobility aids to help him. And the fact that he doesn't is probably because he's poor and he says he has no health insurance, so he probably can't afford that. But it would be nice to see some more modern things in his apartment, like a Hoyer lift or a commode chair, stuff like that. Charlie takes off his shirt, and the audience can see that they really made Brendan Fraser for sure wear a fat suit. And I say again, why didn't they just hire a fat person or a fat disabled person to play this role? And I think it's probably because a disabled fat person would say, like, this is demeaning to me. I don't want to be a part of this. This is demeaning. Why are we making this film? That's a big question that I have about this film throughout. Why are we making this? Who is it for? Who is it for? Because it certainly doesn't make disabled people look good. Doesn't make fat people look good. It just feels like, let's stare at the person we never see and explore them for an hour and a half. It doesn't feel very uplifting or positive in any way. We then see Charlie Googling congestive heart failure symptoms, and I think a lot of disabled folks do this when trying to understand or come to terms with their own disability. You've heard me do it on episodes of this show where we have done, you know, what's your condition and stuff like that. And I think we Google terms when we try to come to terms with our own disabilities, only to realize that trying to understand our medical issues through Google can be terrifying. And we see Charlie kind of realize his own mortality by reading this Google thing of what congestive heart failure looks like and what it will do to him. And we then see Charlie, in an attempt to soothe himself, he downs two big chocolate bars in like a minute and a half, really quickly. And you can tell that he's trying to self-soothe, he's scared of his own mortality, and he's scared of what this means. The whole movie is done like a play, and it takes place in Charlie's small apartment, really tiny, inaccessible apartment, and it felt important for me to highlight this as a disabled person because I am home a lot. I'm at my house most of the time because my home is where I feel the most accessible and the safest, and I think the movie was trying to use the insular setting of his home is like a sad thing, but really a lot of us with disabilities who are disabled, whether we're fat or not, are home because it feels the safest there. And I wish that he would have talked about why he's home a lot, because he feels safe there. A lot of us with disabilities feel that way. And then we very quickly meet Charlie's daughter, Ellie, played by the awesome Sadie Sink from Stranger Things and from the 10-minute All Too Well Taylor Swift video. And the very first thing she says to him is, does this mean I'm going to become fat? Or does this mean I'm going to get fat too? And I just thought, wow, this is the first thing that you have this character say. Just like the fat phobia is so real. It's all, honestly, when she said that, it was painful to watch. And I almost didn't like her character because of that. And so we can see that Charlie and his daughter have a strained, intense relationship because Charlie wasn't there. Charlie wasn't a part of her life because he fathered her, but he was also secretly gay. And you find out later that he has sex with one of his former students. And they end up in a relationship. It's a whole thing. But he wasn't there for her as a kid. And so she comes to see him as a teenager. Ellie says that Charlie is disgusting and he's gross, and this hits home for me because so many people have said that to me as a severely disabled person. So many people say that about disabled folks, about fat people, and I think I understand why this was put in the film, but I really don't feel like I feel like he bludgeoned us over the head with the fat phobia, and it was really uncomfortable to watch. Ellie says, I'm going to leave, you're gross. And Charlie says, if you stay, I will give you money. If you stay with me for a little bit, I'll give you money. And so Ellie is, of course, like, oh, money, great. Okay, I'll stay. So Ellie says, all right, well, come on, come over here and walk over to me. And she pulls away his walker. She's like, come here and walk over to me. And she, like, angrily pulls the walker away. I hated this scene because you are never, ever supposed to yank somebody's mobility aid away from them. Never, ever in a million years are you ever to do that, especially if they're reaching for their walker. And when Ellie said, you know, come walk to me, Charlie went to reach for his walker, and she angrily pulled it away. Please, God, first of all, don't fucking touch our mobility devices, and don't yank them away. It's horrible. Even if you're really angry with a disabled person, do not touch their mobility aid. Yeah, Sadie Sink does not play a likable character at all in this film. I actually really disliked her. It was hard for me to like her character at all in this film. She was kind of a bitch, and I really didn't like her here. I really did not love her, especially when she pulled the walker away and she called her father disgusting. It was horrible. Charlie attempts to stand to walk to her, but falls, and Ellie slams the door behind her, leaving him there, breathless and totally alone. He goes to walk to her, and she gets mad, and she walks away, and then as he's trying to walk to her, he can't. And you can hear him, like, wheezing and breathing really hard. And he's struggling, and she just leaves him there. And I felt like that was really kind of upsetting, because so many people, when disabled people are struggling, they just leave them. And that's a real shame. So, yeah, true to life, but unnecessary to see. Charlie orders a pizza from the pizza man, and the pizza guy says, hey, are you okay? He sounds really concerned because he can hear Charlie moving around the apartment. And he offers to help him. And this made me think of my experiences with delivery people who are very nice sometimes. And I appreciate them. But oftentimes, they also never listen to my accessibility requests. I can't tell you how many times I've ordered food from somebody and they haven't even knocked on the door. And they've left my food on the floor outside my door without even knocking, and then I'll open the door and see the food there and be like, oh, gee, I wish you would have just told me. So the fact that this delivery guy wants to help Charlie and wants to help him feel, wants to see if he's all right, that's super nice, because most delivery people don't listen to accessibility requests. And if you've worked in delivery, please don't leave people's food on their floor. Make sure you hand it to them, especially if they put in the notes, I am disabled, or in his case, I am fat and disabled. Please, you know, help me bring the food up. Never just leave it anywhere. That's not okay. I mean, and Charlie says to this delivery guy, can you just leave it on the stoop? Because he doesn't want the guy to see him. But realistically, hand me my food. Don't leave it outside. Give it to me. Especially if you think I'm having trouble, come in. It's infuriating when people just leave it there. So then we see his nurse, Liz, bring him a new machine to show him his heart rate. I'm pretty sure she brings him a heart rate monitor. He is resistant to this initially. And I think many of us with disabilities are and can be resistant to new tech because it means that our disabilities are changing and they're becoming realer than we wanted them to be. So she hands him this blood pressure machine and says, put it on. I want to hear how you're breathing. And he's like, why do I need this? What is this for? I don't need this. I'm fine. And she like has a conversation with him where she's like, just, you know, please wear it. And so he does, but you can see he's resistant to it. And so she gives him a sandwich and we see him start choking. He starts to choke on it and he can't breathe and he's having trouble breathing. And Liz, thank goodness Liz is there because she rushes to help him. And as a severely disabled person myself, I have choked on many things in my life. And the reality of choking, especially as somebody with cerebral palsy, it scared me a lot. I'm scared of dying from choking. It's one of the things that I'm really afraid of as a disabled person with CP. So I've made a lot of jokes about that fear and how to cope with that fear as a disabled person. I've made the joke that, you know, I'll probably die from choking, so my hope is that I can choke on something I enjoy. I've made that joke many times. But the reality is that I'm very afraid of dying from choking. I'm very afraid of choking on something and having no support team here, or not being able to reach my phone, or not being able to get help when I need it. It is really, really scary. And so in that respect, the scene of him choking and needing help and not being sure if he's going to get it is very true to life. Then the next scene is Charlie drops a key on the floor and has trouble retrieving it and can't reach it. And this is, again, a story of my life that I understand all too well. The struggle of dropping something you really need when you're disabled is very real. And I felt a lot of empathy for him here because I've literally dropped things that I need. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to get that for a couple hours because no one's going to come to help me. I understood what it was like to try to grab something and kind of like the struggle of getting something and reaching something and being able to almost get it, but you're not getting it good enough and then you just can't reach it. And it's so frustrating because you almost have the thing and you can't reach it and then it falls on the floor. And they do that in a couple points in the movie where he drops something and it just, I understood that anger of not being able to get something very, very, very much. So I kind of like that they put that in there. So Ellie asks him, why have you gained all that weight? We then learn that he had an affair with one of his students, which I mentioned earlier. And it kind of is suggested that his disability and his weight gain are a punishment for doing a bad thing. For having an affair with a student. I kind of felt like there was this, they never said it outright in the film, but I felt at multiple points there was this sense of he was being punished due to his weight and his obesity and his disability because he did a bad thing. And it was kind of the undercurrent of the whole film, and it really, really bugged me a lot, because people with disabilities are told constantly their disabilities are because they've sinned or because they're bad. This is a constant thing we deal with. And to see it here, even just for the glimmer that I did, it was really upsetting. And maybe he didn't mean to put it in there, but it felt like every time they talked about his sexuality or what he did, his weight was used as a consequence for that. I wonder if anybody else watching it felt that way. So then the Mormon kid, Thomas, comes back and tells Charlie that when the end times come, he can get a new body. He can get new flesh. And isn't that something he would want? Shouldn't he want that? And this bothered me because disabled people are confronted by this question all too often. We're told, oh yeah, when you die, wouldn't you want to become able-bodied? And I oscillate between, yeah, sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. But part of me really does fucking hope and pray that when I go up to wherever we're going, or down for that matter, I hope I go up, but maybe I'll go down, wherever we go, I'm taking my wheelchair with me. Part of me knows that's true. But then some days I'm like, you know what, I don't want my wheelchair. I don't want to have to worry about this. So I oscillate between that. But I think having the character assume that he would want another body just because he's fat or just because he's disabled is really annoying. And it annoyed me here. The Mormon kid then thinks Charlie is attracted to him, and Charlie has to repeatedly say that he isn't attracted to him. And this was pretty uncomfortable to watch. And again, felt like the sexuality was his queerness. Charlie's queerness was a punishment or something. And of course, the Mormon kid would think that the gay fat guy would be attracted to him. Like, why did that have to be there? It just felt really problematic to me, and I didn't love that part. Didn't love it. Did not love it at all. So Liz, the nurse, then brings Charlie what she terms a fat guy wheelchair. I hate that term. Why can't she just call it a wheelchair? She's like, oh, I brought you a fat guy wheelchair. And of course, Charlie is very resistant to trying it out, because who wants to be introduced to a new mobility device by calling it a fat person wheelchair? It just feels really inappropriate, and it's not great. And of course he's resistant. It's not positioned as freedom. It's used as a punishment for him being fat, and I don't love that for him. Wheelchairs are freedom. They're not punishments for you gaining weight, for you having weight. It's okay to be disabled and fat. And she didn't bring him a fat guy wheelchair. She brought him a wheelchair. Okay, let's see where we are now, because this movie gave me all the feelings. So then he sits in the wheelchair finally, and he realizes that he can have more mobility, which isn't really celebrated. He just kind of moves around a little bit and goes, wee, a lot when he rides in his wheelchair. And you know what? When I ride in my wheelchair, I also go, wee, a lot, because it is fun. And six-year-old me fucking loved being in a power chair. It was the funnest thing ever. So we see a little bit of his comfort as he moves around the apartment in the wheelchair again. And we see Liz and the Mormon kid move things around his apartment so that it is more accessible for him. They move a coffee table. They move stuff out of the way. And this is a pretty regular thing for wheelchair users, needing to rearrange your apartment. I just rearranged my apartment a whole bunch of times in the last few months to try to figure out what's the most accessible for me. And we need to do that a lot often, because we need to find more space to get around. And I finally found a configuration that I can move around more accessibly. I still can't reach anything in my fucking apartment, but at least I can get around. So when I saw them moving things around in his apartment, I was like, oh good, they're making more space for his wheelchair. Awesome. And a lot of people who have to use a new mobility device may not realize that you have to make a lot of space. At one point, Liz gets really frustrated with Charlie and says, I'm the only one that can help you. I'm the only one that can do this for you. I'm the only one. I'm the only one. And from a severely disabled standpoint, as I was watching this, I thought, well, okay, this is going into a really problematic area here, because a lot of caregivers often think that they too are the only one that can help somebody, are the only one that can assist somebody, and they are the saviors. And this can lend itself to a lot of caregiver abuse, disability abuse, ableism that can be deadly quite seriously. And I think we have to unpack that. She isn't the only one that can help him. He should have a team of caregivers around him. There should be someone else assisting her with him, because if he was needing care, she wouldn't be the only one going there. She wouldn't. She simply wouldn't. They would have a team of people around him to ensure he was okay. And they probably would have encouraged him, forcefully or otherwise, to be in the hospital way long before now. Maybe the only reason that she'll come around is that she's the only one that lets him do what he wants. So maybe that's why. But realistically, he would have a lot more people tending to his needs than just one nurse. Also, I just noticed when I Googled the whale for something else, I noticed that they categorized this movie on Google as horror/drama. Fuck you. That's a horrible way to name this film, and just shows you the level of fat phobia that is in a film like this. Why is watching a fat person for an hour and a half live their life a horror movie? That's really gross, Google, and you should probably change that. It's really, really, really horrible to see. It again plays into the trope that disabled people are horrible bodies that we don't want to see. It plays into totally that trope. Google, do better. Another mobility aid that we see Charlie using throughout the film and in a scene that comes up right here is he uses a grabber, which is like a little stick with a bunch of grabby things on it so you can grab certain things. You can pick up things and move things. And I love seeing this because I know a lot of disabled people use grabbers, but we never really see them on film. We never see that on film. So to see it here, even for a second, was like, ooh, cool. Something that I actually use in my real life. Awesome. Every time Charlie has trouble breathing, he recites passages of an essay and poetry to calm himself. Now, the essay he recites will come into play later, but he recites a passage about a whale every single time that he is having trouble breathing and he gets worried. At one point, he says to one of the characters, I'm pretty sure it's the Mormon kid, he says, who would want me to be a part of their life? Who would want someone like me to be a part of their life? And what I see here is the character of Charlie is dealing with a lot of internalized fat phobia and a lot of internalized ableism. And I, as a severely disabled person with a body that doesn't look normative and doesn't look okay and doesn't always look healthy, I felt the exact same way too. Who would want me in their life? Who needs me around? I'm not important. And I think a lot of us feel that way. So I wish that they would have talked about this, but I wish that they would, I wish he would have said something like exposition and said like, you know, I'm really having a lot of internalized ableism right now. Here's how I feel. Or I'm having a lot of internalized fat phobia right now. Here's how I feel. But I definitely have felt that way. And I definitely have said in my mind's eye, who would want me to be a part of their life? So Ellie jokes to Thomas, the Mormon kid, that she gave Charlie some Ambien and put it in his drink. That's the next scene. I didn't like this because disabled people are constantly over-medicated or under-medicated. Specifically, they are over-medicated into compliance to do what somebody wants them to do. So she wanted him to fall asleep. She wanted him to be not awake. So she gave him drugs. That's really disturbing from a disability standpoint because this happens to disabled people all the time. And while it was played off as a joke here, it really made me uncomfortable. It really made me feel like Darren Aronofsky's not really getting the weight of what he's doing here, doesn't understand the gravity of how important it is what he's doing. It really bugged me a lot. And then, for some reason, Ellie's mom and Charlie's ex-wife shows up to just be like, what the fuck is happening? I think everyone in the movie at this point realizes Charlie's not well, realizes he's dying for sure, and they all want to be with him to spend some time together. And when they all show up is when we realize that Charlie has been telling everybody that he has no money, and he's been telling Liz, his caregiver, that he has no money, but he actually has like hundreds of thousands of dollars in a savings account for his daughter Ellie, and he's not been taking care of himself. He wants the money for her. And so Liz is so angry that she's been helping someone who she thought was really poor, and she, you know, did all the suffering when she thought he had no money. And I get why she's angry, but I also felt like disabled people are allowed to do things with their own money, even if it's a stupid thing. They're allowed to do things with their own money, even if it's to his detriment and horrible and a bad idea. He's allowed to. Disabled people have the right to make bad decisions. Disabled people have the right to fuck up, to lose money, to make a mistake. We have the right to do that, and we need to be allowed to do that, regardless of the consequences. And then, in a heated moment, Ellie says that she doesn't care about him. He is fat, and she hopes Actually, what she says is, I wrote it down. She says, she tells him to go die, and that she doesn't care about him. This hit home because disabled people hear this kind of stuff on the daily. I hear this on a Tuesday, next. We hear this all the time, and I know it was supposed to, like, shock an audience, but it just felt like a Tuesday for me, frankly. And it bothered me. It bugged me a lot. And so we see then Charlie and his ex-wife are in the room, and Ellie's gone, and they're talking about how evil Ellie is and how rude she is. And Charlie has this, like, unfettered optimism that's like, oh no, she's a beautiful girl and I love her, she's my daughter, blah blah. And constantly he keeps saying how great she is, when really she's just a bitch throughout the whole movie, frankly. And I would have loved to have seen Charlie get properly angry in the film. He really does play this super nice, reserved, quiet, kind of fat, disabled guy. And I wanted to see him show some more emotion here, because they were pretty mean to him, especially his daughter. So he's with his ex-wife in the room, and he sees that Ellie has been taking really mean photos of Charlie and putting them on social media about what a fat, you know, person he is, and how, I think the quote in the movie is something like, hell's gonna have a grease fire when he dies or something. And she puts all these, like, mean things about him on social media. And again, this happens a lot to disabled and fat people. I don't know why we had to see this in a film. This happens daily to a lot of people who don't look normative. And I really had a problem with it. It really bothered me, this part especially, because it happens constantly. That's part of why I started the Disabled People Are Hot campaign 5 years ago, to, you know, stop those kind of images and have positive imagery around disabled bodies. But we get made fun of on the internet constantly. So then Charlie's ex-wife, Mary, knows he's getting worse and knows he's going to die, and she asks if she can hear his heart. So she puts her head on his shoulder and, like, listens to him breathe. And it's meant to be a heartbreaking moment, and it is, but it also feels weirdly ableist to me, and I'm not sure why. Like, why do you get to listen to my body as it fails? What gives you the right to do that? It just felt very weird. It felt like he was, again, being used as a prop and not as anything else. Again, the whole theme of him being fat as a punishment is so prevalent and so concurrent throughout this movie, and it's really, really bothering me, and I can't explain why. Being fat is a punishment for being gay in this movie, and so many other different themes, and I just hate it. That part I really, really don't like. So then everyone in the movie keeps telling him to go to the hospital, but as a severely disabled person myself, I know how they would treat him there. I know what they would do for him. They wouldn't give him any support. They'd probably leave him there and ask him where the fuck his caregiver was, and they wouldn't do anything for him. So I understand why he's so hesitant to go into the hospital system as a disabled and fat person. I get that. Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, I totally understand why Charlie feels that way, and the more and more they push him, the less and less he wants to go. This movie does really hit home in terms of the sad life of a fat person, but I wish it would look at some of his romantic life. I would have loved to have seen this movie be like, to have it be redone as a romantic comedy. Obviously, we would not call it The Whale, because how fucking offensive would that be? But wouldn't it be cool to see a fat person, a fat queer person, fall in love on screen? Like, they talk about his partner that he was with, and they talk about how his partner died and all these tragic things happened. But wouldn't it be amazing if for a second we had a film where a fat queer person, like, had a good life? If we want to redo this movie as a comedy, like Brendan Fraser, we can have you come in just at your own weight and play a queer person who falls in love with another queer person, and it's great. Why can't we redo it that way and call it, like, something cute that I can't think of right now, but it could be redone as a romantic comedy. Not so fucking sad. Brendan Fraser, call me. Let's get you in like a fat, middle-aged comedic role. We can do that, right? I'll be your love interest. I'll be in a wheelchair. Let's do it. Brendan Fraser, call me. Call me. So the pizza guy, who has been consistently leaving pizzas throughout the film, finally goes to leave his last pizza and sees Charlie and sees him in his wheelchair and sees how fat he is. And he looks at him and he goes, oh, and he runs away in disgust. And I don't understand why this needs to be in the movie. Disabled people and fat people have people in real life run away from them. It just felt like it was really unnecessary, and I feel like any fat viewers or disabled viewers would, that hits really close to home and not in a good way. How many ways can you underpin that people are afraid of disabled and fat people in this film? This is what happens when a non-disabled person or a non-fat person writes about an experience they don't have. This is what happens. So after the pizza guy runs away in disgust, Charlie, in a fit of anger, eats the pizza really fast, knowing that it's probably going to kill him. This scene makes me angry. He just got mad and he starts eating everything in his fridge, and he makes himself sick and he throws up because he's angry that he was rejected. He's angry that people look at him like that. He's so mad. He gets really, really angry, and he writes a bunch of stuff on his computer for the students, telling them to, because he's also a teacher, by the way. I didn't mention that. He's a teacher, and he works from home. So he writes a bunch of stuff for the students about, write honestly, fuck the essays, write what's in your heart, that kind of stuff. So then the next scene, after he gets mad, we see him throw up again, and he's mad. And then he sees the Mormon kid, Thomas, and they're having a chat, and Charlie says, Thomas, do you find me disgusting? And Thomas says, yeah, I do find you disgusting, in a fit of, like, in an unexpected reaction. And so, again, why do we constantly have to tell this character that he has no value? Why? Who is this for, Darren Aronofsky? Who is this for? So Charlie finally decides to show himself to his online writing class, because the whole movie he's been on Zoom but hasn't shown his face. And so he puts the camera on, and you can see the students' look of disgust on their face. You can see them be upset. You can see them, they're angry. And I thought, why? Why isn't there a fat person in the room that's not, that doesn't feel anything about this? So what? He's a fat man. So what? Why couldn't someone just say, yeah, so what? Our professor's fat. Move on. So then Liz comes in, realizes that Charlie is having trouble breathing, and goes out to call an ambulance, and she hugs him because I think she realizes this is the last time that she's going to see him. She hugs him and says, okay, I'll go wait downstairs. And then Ellie is there for some reason. And before Liz leaves, she tells Charlie that she hates him for putting her through this. She hates him for making her go through this, and how could he do this? And again, she makes his disability, she makes this the disabled fat person story feel all about her, about what he did to her. And I feel like that's unfair. Why does it have to be about her? So then Ellie comes back in and reads the passage of her essay that Charlie has been reciting the whole movie. And then as she's reading this to him, she calls him a fat fuck a bunch of times and says how fat he is. And then she says, "Daddy, like, I love you, please." And then he stands up to go be with her. And as he stands up to walk to her, you see a flash of bright light, and then he dies, and that's the end of the film. That's literally how the film ends, and I was so angry when I first saw the ending, and I'm still really mad about it, because how the fuck did it end that way? The whole movie was like a sad piece about fatness and disability, no joy in the film at all. And that was literally it. So I give it, I said 2.2 out of 5 power chairs, but really, I'm going to have to downgrade that to 1 out of 5 power chairs. I love you, Brendan Fraser. You're a great actor. George of the Jungle and Dudley Do Right were some of my favorite films. Blast from the Past with Alicia Silverstone from 25 years ago. Great fucking film. I would watch that all day, every day. But you in this film, I did not like it. I did not enjoy it. I was really mad that you were in this. I feel like you, as your comeback film, you deserve something so much better, so much more better well-written, so much less ableist. You deserve something better. There was so much ableism in this film that it hurt my heart. It makes me angry even thinking about it right now. I'm mad that this was even made. Who is this film for? Who's it for? What message does it send to disabled or fat people, or disabled people who are fat, or fat people who are disabled? What message are they getting? I wonder if there were a disabled person on set, or even a fat person on set, how would this story look and feel different, I wonder. Of the film, director Darren Aronofsky said, "People with obesity are generally written as the bad guy or as the punchlines. We wanted to create a fully worked out character who has bad parts and good parts about him. Charlie is very selfish, but he's also full of love and seeking forgiveness. So the controversy, because you made Brendan Fraser wear a fat suit and crip up, makes no sense to Darren Aronofsky. Brendan Fraser is the right actor to play the role, and the film is an exercise in empathy." I disagree with you, sir. I feel like the film is an exercise in trauma porn. I don't enjoy it. It feels completely wrong for Brendan Fraser to have been in this film. And again, who is it for? If you wanted to have him be a fully fledged character, hire a fat disabled person. Seriously, that's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. So I give this film 1.5 power chairs out of 5. I don't love it. Let me know what you think in emails to me at andrew@andrewgrizzle.com. Let me know what other movies in the Popcorn and Power Chair series you want me to do. I would love to review them with guests or by myself. Let me know. Please send me an email, and thank you for being here. Here's the regular outro. Please go to wherever you can to support the show if you want to. Patreon.com/disabilityafterdark, or leave us a review. Thanks, friends. Bye. All right, friends, well, there goes another episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories with me, your host, Andrew Gerza. If you want to follow my work, you can head over to my social media, Andrew Gerza 6 on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, although I never use it. If you want to follow my website and find out about my speaking opportunities, my gigs, and ways to have me come to your event, go to www.andrewgerza.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/disabilityafterdark, and you can get the show days early, completely ad-free, and a shout-out on the air. So if you want to support the show, you're able to do that. And please, please, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help shows like this about disability, which are very rare, get supported. Thank you so much for being with us, and stay comfy, cozy, and crippled. Until next time, bye! Copyright notice. Disability After Dark was created, recorded, and produced by Cripple & Co. Productions and Andrew Gerza. Any and all use of materials, graphics, audio recordings, etc. cannot be used or distributed without express permission. If you would like to use an episode of the podcast or license an episode of the podcast on your website, please consider emailing Andrew Gerza and Cripple & Co. Productions at disabilityafterdarkpod@gmail.com. Copyright 2024.